Well, here you have it. Honduras team. We actually were a team. Oh, wait. I got to dismiss. There we go. If you're part of the junior church, now's a good time for you guys to head out. There we go. We're actually a team of 21 people, and some of those people are out of state. Others are just gone this morning. I know Megan Dahlgren couldn't be here, and a bunch of others. So we've got, I don't know, about half of the team here with you. This last June, we set out on a, I'm just going to hand that to you for now, set out on a mission trip to Honduras. And this morning, we're just going to give a lot of the rest of the service to, go back, to be able to express to you some of the things that we experienced while we were over in Honduras. The things that God did. And hopefully, throughout the course of this morning, to give a vision for a future of how God might want to use you and how God might want to use us as a result of really how the Lord has changed our hearts. So I want to start out with a verse that comes from Matthew. It's really the core of our church and will set a focus for us this morning. Would somebody like to, maybe from the team, Matt, you want to just read that?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age.
That's it. That's Jesus, some of his last words when he was here on earth, a command to his people, a command to us to go and make disciples of all nations. It's not just enough to make disciples of our own community, but he says also go out into all nations making disciples. The way we do that is in part through a ministry in Honduras. This is the O'Connor family, a picture taken a couple years ago, Patrick and Debbie and their two kids. And the O'Connors are our missionaries in Honduras. They've been there for about 15 years, and they're church planters. So when they got into Honduras, they went into rural areas, up in the mountains, in the jungles, where there really aren't any Bible-believing evangelical churches. And they wanted to plant churches in these rural communities so that the gospel would be there. They did that through raising up nationals, national pastors, national church planters, and have created this whole movement of churches. We've sent teams over the years. Here's a picture of the pastors' conference. Some of the pastors that are a part of the church planting movement. We've sent teams over the years, literally into the jungles, to help a pastor construct their church. So a pastor starts a church. They have a church body. Maybe they've bought some land, and our church in the past has gone to help build a building to help establish the church. Well, this year we wanted to do something different. We've been planning it for a couple years now, a creative venture that's never been done before in our movement, to have a pastor's family conference. There's been pastor training that has taken place, but we wanted to minister to the whole family. And so we did that here. This is a picture of a handful of pastors and their families in the movement that we ministered to with this pastor's family conference. And I'd like to invite Steve up just for a minute to talk to this.
You know, I've been a pastor for almost 30 years, and I've been a pastor's kid for almost 50. And during that time, I see and have come to experience some of the stresses and strains that come with a life that's, quote, always on the clock. You're never really away from the work, and the Bible even speaks to that kind of constancy of the burden. That is one thing, and it's quite manageable in a setting like ours, where there's a wonderful team, other staff, other pastors, other support team members and elders. But imagine that, and it's not hard for me to imagine being far removed from anybody else that can be sort of kindred spirit with you. You feel alone. And most of these people are in very, very isolated, remote places in Honduras, which When I first saw this picture, we reviewed this ahead of time, I just got chills thinking of the kind of almost like a refreshing drink at the well this experience must have been for these pastors and their wives and their children to come together and really answer the question, are we in this thing alone? And of course the resounding answer is no. There's lots of kinship and partnership that we share together in the common cause of the gospel. So what you folks did and what this part of what this trip was about just gave me chills to imagine the kind of lift it was to some very isolated, sort of lonely at times, pastors and their families.
And that really was the case. Here's a picture of one family. You can see the pastor right here, his wife, and count them, there are seven children. And this is a typical Honduras family, pastor and his family. He gave, at the end of the weekend, we gave testimony, or the chance for the pastors to give testimonies what the weekend meant to them. And this man was literally in tears at the end of the conference, just over what it meant to him. This family, he was saying, we have never, ever gone anywhere together as a family. This was the first time they've ever... I mean, look at, you know, some of these kids are older, and they've never been anywhere as a family. In our mind, we think of vacations, and, you know, but for them, on their income, they just couldn't do it. So they were given a gift, a weekend, where they could come as their whole family, be refreshed, be rested, be ministered to at every level, children's, youth, women, men, as a couple, and it was just a wonderful time. So I'm going to let some of the team share about the different aspects of the conference so you kind of get a feel for what we did and what we said. I'm going to start with Kara, if you could, and I know that there's so much to say. And we're going with the philosophy of less is more this morning for everyone. Listen to this, you know, like a minute and 30 seconds, because otherwise we're going to be here till 3. So, Kara, why don't you just share a little bit about the children's ministry and what that was like at the conference?
Okay, well, we worked with the children, the pastors, youngins, and it was a lot of fun. We just played games with them and did puppet shows and crafts and coloring, which they love. They could color all day if we would have let them, and we had bubbles and Bible stories and just played with them and just loved on them and loved, just showed them love. And it was just really cool just to be able to invest in the lives of quite possibly the future Christian leaders of Honduras. And it was just really neat. And one specific highlight was that on Saturday, we were able to give a Bible story, and you know, we had different events planned for each day and each session. And at one point, three of the young boys came to know the Lord. So you all get to meet them one day. So that's pretty exciting.
That's great. Thanks, Kara. So the children's ministry was a big part. I was so impressed by the children's team because it was constant. They had them all weekend. All these kids. And they just did a fantastic job. The next group was the youth ministry, and I want to let Brian Nelson just share briefly about what the youth ministry was like and how impactful that was.
Oh, yeah, the youth ministry was just awesome. Like, we ended with the campfire where kids shared their testimonies, and the one that really stuck out to me was Ambrosio's son, was Josue. And we were kindred spirits in the sense that we wanted to go so many different directions in our lives for the start, and he was like, I want to be an architect, a soccer player, or a missionary pastor type, you know, go into ministry. And he was like, I broke my leg. Okay, well, there goes my professional soccer career. And so he came to the pastor's conference thinking, okay, I'm going to be an architect, or, you know, I'm going to be a pastor, or, you know, missionary. And his dad is one of the missionaries out there, and through the pastor's conference, he himself came to the conclusion that, you know, I want to be a pastor, I want to be in ministry. And we were kindred spirits in that regard of it was a moment for me as well where I surrendered and was, you know, I was going to have to share my testimony in front of the youth, and I was all nervous, like, you know, oh, what am I going to do, you know, I was, never before, but I was like thinking, man, what's, you know, God, you know, I need your help, you know, and I told God, I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll
if I do good, then that'll be the sign that I'll get into ministry and stuff. let's make God a deal. Yeah, funny. Right? And so my nervousness didn't go away the whole week. I was trying to pray, praying. And finally, God would, no matter how I do, talking to these kids, share my testimony, and then I'll go to ministry first. I'll go into Bible college first, and then there went my fear. And the whole thing about that is I thought about Moses, and Moses said, "Hey, God, who am I to do this?" And God was like, "I'll be with you." And I came to that realization, it has nothing to do with me. I could just blow smoke, to everybody, and my voice and but without the Spirit, it just drops to the ground. And so I realized that if God is with me, it's all good. And so that was my moment of me and Josue had the same moment of, we should both be getting this at the same time, And so that was awesome. That was how the pastor's conference impacted me personally, thinking I was going to impact these kids. But through all of that, it impacted my heart and what the foundation for the rest of my life is going to be.
That's great. Good. I'm proud of Brian because that was a 3-hour story that he condensed down into 3 minutes. So, good job, man. I remember even as a kid what an impact like a weekend retreat had on my life and forming me for going into ministry. And I think that is the same case for a lot of these youth. And as Brian talked about Josue, I mean, these are big moments for people. And the youth, I'll just say this too, the youth was a big surprise to me because I was focused in on the parents, mom and dad, and I knew there was going to be a children's ministry. That's about it. About 2 weeks before we left, I got an email saying, yeah, we've got about just over 30 youth that are going to be there. I had no plan for youth, so I just rallied a few people on the team, and what God did with the youth ministry was it was a surprise. It was beyond what I had even, it wasn't even on my radar, and God took it to a powerful, shaping experience where these folks built into kids, all pastors' kids, never been able to be pastors' kids and understand the stress in a group like that before, but it was just huge. Another component to the ministry was women's ministry there, and so I'm going to ask Susan and Brenda were kind of my women's ministry people. I'm going to let them share about what they did
okay.
There.
The women's ministry was very informal and really integrated into the rest of the pastors' conference. They had a great workshop run by one of the Honduran pastors' wives, and I know that we were blessed by being facilitators to allow these ladies to come together who normally can't go to their weekly Beth Moore study or to their annual retreat. They just don't have that available. They're very isolated. They're trying to learn how to be women of God really on their own. So this is a weekend where they were able to come together and encourage one another and share ideas. And two times particularly, I think, we had a play morning where the kids, we took the whole families to a pool, actually a beautiful setting, mountains in the background. And while the kids were playing in the pool, we did manicures and pedicures and feet washing for the ladies. And what was fun was just to see them yak, yak, yak with each other and connect and have that special time. The other time that I felt like I was ushered to the presence of God is in the prayer time. We split the men and women up, and the women's prayer groups were just truly amazing. I think we have so much, and they have so little. I'm not sure there's much difference spiritually in our poverty, but it was just raw and on the surface because of their physical needs and so immediate needs. In that prayer time, they really supported one another and prayed with a fervency that I really haven't experienced elsewhere. It was really quite a blessing. So,
it really is. A lot of these pastors, it's not uncommon for them to make about $80 a month, just as a to survive on a family that big out in rural areas. So, yeah, and gas is $4.50 a gallon. So it's not a lot of change.
And it was a big sacrifice for these families to come, just even the gas wise. So,
We also did, obviously, ministry with the pastors and their families. We invited Pastor Delmar and his wife to come. They've been pastors for or he's been a pastor for 25 years in Honduras, and we wanted the conference to have a Honduran feel to it so that it wasn't just all of us gringos coming and putting on a show, but that they would have people there who have walked in their shoes and could really minister. So both he and she did a great job in leading some of the workshops. I did a marriage counseling workshop that was really great to help couples connect as a couple more. Brad did some workshops. Here's a picture of some of the worship times that we shared. And we were so blessed by all that God did. He just blew us away at every step of how he ministered to these families and just built them up to go back and minister to their churches. That was the conference took place in Siguatepeque, where the O'Connors live. While we were there, we did several different things. One of them was an outreach to the local community. I'm going to let Brad share a little bit about that.
Thanks, Johnny. One of the cool things is to see the power of your prayers. God really went before us, you heard in the conference, but we went to a missionary family. They have a house in the neighborhood, and they just invite the neighbors over once a week, and it's just hang out, have a meal, and then share as God opens the doors. Well, God opened the door for our team to just play basketball. There's a hoop about this tall that Ted Whiteman and I saw. We were like,
there it is.
That,
right
yeah.
There.
It's and it was okay. Sweaty. It was bloody. It rained. It poured down on us. Rain, and it was just quite a journey together with the guys. And and we took a little break after the blood increased at one point. And we decided to I just shared my story, and God worked among those boys. And I think there are 11 or 12 boys, and all of them, starting with the oldest, who was 18 or 19, he just said, man, I want to follow Jesus. And so it was really powerful. We want you guys to know, we can't underestimate the fact that we're all one body. We talked about, in preparation for this trip, this isn't us going on the mission. We're not going to be missionaries. We are missionaries. We're all missionaries. And we're just the extension of this whole missional group that got to, in some ways, be on site. You guys were here working and serving. So thank you for your prayers. I think that opportunity, just the way it works and the way God moved, we all just thought, wow, that was God. That was awesome. And one of the things I saw from this trip, being on the youth team, is all five of us on the youth team shared our testimony at some point during the pastor's conference. And amazing stories. Incredible how God has saved each of us differently, and yet it connected with these young people in such a powerful way. And it made me want to hear all of your testimonies and just to say, man, we need to be sharing those because it is powerful. I think it's true to say the trip and the ministry that was done, sure, it ministered to those Hondurans, but I think all of us were just getting blessed and ministered to in a way that's awesome. Yeah. So I just want to say that and thank you guys.
Yeah, it's true. While we were there, we really got a crash course in missions. We got to hear from lots of different missionaries what they're doing, how their work's going, hear stories. And Amy wanted to share a story that really stood out to her that we heard from Eric Sanchez, one of the missionaries there.
He was one of the rural mountain pastors, Pastor Eric Sanchez, and he had a really cool story. He felt, after Hurricane Katrina, he quit his job,
Mitch.
That's
all right. Hurricane Mitch.
Hurricane Mitch. After Hurricane Mitch, he quit his job, which was totally unheard of because everyone needed jobs at that time. And he decided that he was going to go out and do God's work. And so he was brought up to this, he somehow found this mountain village, and they didn't have a church. And so he started up a ministry there, and pretty soon after, his house got hit by lightning, and it totally burned a hole through the roof and a huge crater in the ground. And everyone in that town said, see, you're being punished by God because you shouldn't be doing this, because they were Catholics, or they say Catholics because they're not the normal Catholics that we know of. And anyway, so what ended up happening, though, and this is one of God's little surprises, this huge crater attracted tons of people. And so all these people from all over the village started coming to see this big crater in the ground. And so he started making coffee. Pastor Eric's wife, I can't remember her name, she started making coffee and and serving bread to them, and then Pastor Eric started sharing the gospel, and people started getting saved, and more people started coming and coming. So, I mean, it's just amazing to see that, like, God can move mountains. God can put a crater in the middle of your house. But he is mighty to save. He is mighty to
Amen.
Save.
Amen. That's great. The next portion, so that was the first half of the trip. We did all this ministry, did the pastor's conference in Tegucigalpa. The second half of the trip took place up in Tegucigalpa, the capital of Honduras. You can see some pictures taken that overlook the city. A lot of people there, a lot of needs, and everything we'll be talking about from here on out revolves around the MICA project and what God is doing in them and through them. And though the MICA project was founded on the verse out of Micah 6:8 that we mentioned earlier today, Isaiah 50 really speaks, when I read that, I think of the MICA project. I'll just read it. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. That's what we saw. That's what the MICA project is doing, is they are spending themselves on behalf of the hungry. They're satisfying the needs of the oppressed, and as a result, they're this bright light in the midst of a dark place. The MICA Project was founded by Michael Miller. There's Michael. He's been in Honduras for about 11 years now, and he's the director, and it's amazing. We're going to be showing you some pictures here from some of the ministry that takes place. And I want to warn you on the front end that some of these pictures are hard to see and hard to experience, as we found it very difficult to be there. But yet we show them to you to speak to the redemptive nature that the MICA project is having, and to show you really what God is doing, taking, redeeming people out of the pit and lifting them up in amazing ways. So here's a picture of the street ministry that we did, the project, and I wanted to let Mary share a little bit about that.
I can't share this story sitting down. Brian Wiggs tried to prepare us for the ministry under the bridge, and if any of you have been to Bridgetown, he gave us a little bit of insight on that, but then he said, but they're primal. The kids that come to the bridge in Honduras are primal, and I'm like, primal? What? And Brian, I didn't understand that point, but we went down there and we took boys from the MICA project with us, because they had been rescued from this hopelessness themselves, and they want to go and minister to others. And so we walked through the streets of Tegucigalpa with water and foot washing basins and food. We took about 25 plates of food with that had chicken and rice and beans on it, and we ate a lot of that all week, 2 weeks. But we took it for them, and we took bags of water. And Brian led the way for us to get down there. And we get there, and sure enough, within moments, they all showed up, 25, 30 boys, some girls. And we had the bags of food, each of us, and they wanted the food, and they wanted it now. And the MICA boys tried to help us to get them to sit in a circle. Come on, sit down, because we wanted everybody to get one equally. And they weren't really cooperating, but some of them were, and they started to sit down until this one boy was so angry, he just pulls out a knife and says, I want my food now. And we're like, ooh, what do we do with this boy? And out of nowhere, when Pastor Steve talked about surprises this summer, there comes an angel grandma out of nowhere. And she was speaking Spanish, but I'm going to translate for you, because she pulled out her grandma card and she goes, young man, you put that knife down. These nice people came to help us and bring us some food, and you think to... And she shook his hand till he dropped that knife. And we're going, oh, okay. And another boy comes along and he picks it up and he puts it in his pocket, point up. And I go, there's a smart one. And so he proceeded. He sat down. The rest of them sat as best as you can imagine, sitting in a circle. And we started to hand out the food plate by plate. And literally some of the boys took that plate, stuffed it in their pants, got back in the circle on the other side so they could get another plate, because they did not know that they would have food tomorrow. And the primal part was the hard part. But Brian sees the heart of these people and the love. We would wash their feet And I remember this one girl in particular, and I just touched her cheek and said, "You're beautiful. Their hearts are beautiful. And God loves them so much, and we can see that love." I just, I think Brian's a man for the job there. That is Bridgetown, Honduras.
Yeah. You can see here, too, Jack. You can see in this picture the boy with a Coke bottle. Most of the street kids there are on glue, which means they'll take a Coke bottle or a baby jar or a bag or something with some yellow glue in there, and they inhale the fumes to be able to numb themselves of the pain of life has on the street for them. And it's incredibly addictive. I mean, it is. I've been told more powerful and addictive than cocaine and heroin. And it's common. You see it there all the time. Here's a picture with Brian and some of the boys you see here. And really, the thing that hits me is just the contrast between what these boys were like on the street. And every boy that's in the MICA project you can see here is a boy that has come from the street. And that there's a picture of the MICA boys. Most of these kids have had the glue in the background and have been on the street. And here, Michael and the boys, they take about two kids every year off the street and integrate them into the MICA project. And the redemption that takes place in these boys is just amazing. It is, they are godly leaders, just incredible, incredible people. Here's a specific picture of Marvin. You can see Marvin there. This is a picture taken 1 year ago. He has a bag of glue right there. Marvin got into the MICA project, and through various, kind of a rough year of pulling him off the street, but 1 year later we celebrated, while we were there, it was his 1 year anniversary. And you can see a picture of what Marvin is like today. It's just amazing. Then another aspect, I think what impressed me so much about the MICA project is the work that they've done with the boys, taking them from the street into the home. And if that was all the MICA project was about, that alone is amazing and enough to just say, you guys, what God is doing is huge. But they also have a redemptive presence and outreach into the community. And while we were there, we got to go to the dump. Here's a picture of the dump. There's thousands of vultures you can see in the garbage up here. And it's a mix of people and vultures and dogs and animals just trying to find anything of value in the dump there, the city dump in Taguise. You can see a couple of pictures of people who they have a garbage bag that they fill up with valuables, lots of recyclables like pop cans or things like that, that is a form of work that they'll sell to try to make some money from. Up on the hillside overlooking the dump, you can see some of the homes that these families have right there. While we were there, we prayed for the people of the dump, shared the gospel, brought water to them. But that was a very small window of time that we had there. I want to ask Jessica to share a little bit about the children of the dump. There's several hundred children there. Here's a picture of one boy. Jessica, you want to share that?
I said this once, so I won't cry, hopefully, this time. But going to the dump was one of my biggest fears, even just going there. And then actually going there, it made me sick. It made me angry. It made me cry. And I think that it makes God sick, and I think it makes God cry. And I think it's not fair that there are little kids that are scavenging amongst dogs and vultures, and that's how they live, and that's all they know, and they don't get to go to school, and not to just leave that and be like, oh, that's so sad. And one of the things that Michael Miller has done and some of the people associated with him is start school for these kids that live in the dump. And I mean, it's like they're thrown away by society. They live in the garbage, and they don't get to go to school. Do you want to show the first picture?
Yeah.
The first school is very informal, in the dump class, but an opportunity to break this cycle of the poverty. And while we were there, we had the opportunity to go to a school that's now been built, an actual building, where they get to go in the morning and put on uniforms and be like normal kids, then go back in the afternoon and work in the dump with their families. And I was totally freaked out. John tells me the day before, yeah, there's 140 kids you're going to have in the morning. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And the other thing too, just with the MICA project, it's not just like, oh, these boys are off the street and, you know, they're not these drug addicts anymore. They are our Christian brothers that are moving mountains there for the Lord. And with some of the puppets that the ladies in our church made, we went down there, and another Marvin, and I was all scared to go with the kids. He comes in with the puppets and the guitar, and he has been tutoring these kids and knows these kids, and he just had them. And he just loved on them and ministered to them, and it was just like, oh, Lord. And these MICA boys, some of them are going on YWAM trips for missionaries, and this boy Marvin, that is just the most gifted with kids, wants to be a music ministry, go to seminary and do ministry with kids. And it's just like, it may not change the whole situation, but it's changing the lives of these kids, and these MICA boys need our prayers, and they're changing the world in Honduras. And it's like, oh, Lord, yeah, I've been given so much more, and what can I do with that?
So the MICA project, they birthed the school, but it's, as you can see, gotten so big that it's become its own entity now and its own thing. And that's part of the vision of, like with the Whigs and their plans to move there, that we could birth another vocational school so that kids from the dump and from the street could literally graduate from these elementary schools into career schools so that they'd be able to have a new life. Part of the ministry of MICA also is with the boys, when their family is still destitute and there's problems going on. The boys in the project have trouble moving on with their life just for guilt reasons of, hey, no, I need to be with my family. So part of the commitment of the MICA project is also to come alongside the families associated with the project to take care of them. And so Michael Miller is trying to raise up the families of the boys as well. This is one of the projects we did was a family in connection that the MICA project had a relationship with and is trying to help this family. We built a home. They're homeless, and it's up on the hillside here. This is the foundation of the home that we made out of rocks and dirt. It's kind of how they do it there. And here's a construction piece for the home there. It's really a meager. It's a meager home, but it'll give shelter and help provision for the family. Michael Miller, when he first moved to Honduras, hadn't been there more than a couple months when Hurricane Mitch came in and swept through the country, devastating communities. And one of those communities that had been totally flattened, nothing left of it, he took the people of the community as a whole community and led the way in a reconstruction project called Villa Linda Miller, named after his mom. And there's a university that has done studies of 50 different reconstruction projects after Hurricane Mitch, and Villa Miller came out the best done reconstruction project in the country. And so it's really a testament to Michael, to God, for what he's doing through them, and the MICA project ministers and has a relationship with this community that's ongoing, and I want to ask Rachel to just share a little bit about that.
So you've been hearing Michael's name a lot. I mean, this is what he did first, and then the MICA project, and then the dump. And so he's a very humble man to have done such great things. Hurricane Mitch came in 1998. It took 3 years before families could move into the house. And I remember thinking, 3 years. But the reason he got involved is because the community wanted to rebuild their own community, not like, hey, come build this for us. And part of the work we did there was, you know, we were painting the school because they're expanding the school there. We were digging a ditch for a retaining wall. there. And after we did all that manual labor for 6-7 hours in a day to barely see a difference, I know why it took 3 years for them to get in there, because they did it all by hand, the community members. And if you've ever dug anything with the shovel, you know it's a lot of work and a little bit to show for it. And so while we were working there digging the ditches, the kids got done from school. And to show you what their parents have passed down to them, they would begin helping us dig the ditches, or, you know, and it was just amazing. And these little kids run up to you and hug you. And I'm a middle school teacher, and I'm used to them running away from me, not, you know, coming toward me. And so they just come up and give hugs, and they're used to people coming and doing this work. Piecemeal, it's 10 years ongoing, you know, in this community. We also did some children's ministry there. And I tell you, this whole trip, God put people in the right places. And I wasn't sure where, you know, he had for me, because I work with middle school kids. You know how they are. But if you have one or had one. So, we get in there. We're doing children's ministry. And all the kids were pretty much into it, except for some sixth graders in the back who had their arms folded. And I'm like, oh, I know that look. I can deal with that. I can do that, you know. And so the lesson went really well. And the kids loved the story, and everybody did a great job there. So a lot going on here, just with the construction projects and the school. And this community has one road that goes into it to keep it secure, because it used to be in an urban setting. So now it's continually growing with that base.
Matt had a few things that he wanted to share as well, so we'll let him share.
And I'm sharing last because I'm not really going to share about anything that we did on the trip besides the processing that we did as we went along. I went through this, I know, and I think that some other members of our team and anyone else that's been on short-term missions have probably been through the same thing. We're just trying to think through an understanding of short-term versus long-term missions and how effective each is and what our place is in any of those things. And in going on a trip like this, it also makes you feel like, why am I a software salesman in Portland, Oregon, and why shouldn't I be off doing this? And I think, number one, our church has an extremely healthy view of short-term missions and in missions in general. Our short-term mission to Honduras was to support the existing leadership in Honduras and to bless them and to make sure that they're better enabled to minister to their communities. And for us, that was a real blessing to us, but I think our team really felt like that's what mission should be, is supporting those people, supporting people like Brian Wiggs' family and the Vaughns, and trying to walk behind them. And then when it comes to what should I be doing here in my community, well, it's just knowing that it's such a blessing being able to earn money so that we can help people like the Wiggses, or, you know, donate to the Missions Fund, and John has probably many more people that we can help. So, you know, I think pray for those people, pray for the leaders, give financially through prayer, however you can, to those people. We're called to do that as a church and as individuals and as a body of Christ. And I think that we really learned that in a significant way on this trip.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I know there's so much more to share, and we're short on time, and there's some more things we have to do, or we get to do, towards the end of our service. I know I want Brian Wiggs, for one, has a lot more to share. We don't have time for right now, but... Who handed him the mic? Yeah. But you want to say something real quick?
Real quick.
Real quick.
Anyway, I have to, I got to stand up too, because Mary got me all fired up, and it's been an amazing day. But this was probably out of the five times I've been there now, one of the most impactful trips that we have taken, with the way that the relationships were built, not only with Drew Smith, who in St. Louis, and the people we met sitting in ex-presidential offices and stuff with the people that are going to come on board for the vocational school, to a guy by the name of David, who was a policeman who was standing on a street corner, and I was talking on the cell phone while you're driving, and don't ever do that in Honduras because they'll pull you over. And then they'll get in your car. Next thing I know, and I don't have a driver's license, and David's going, this doesn't look good for you. I'm going, no, because that's Drew's driver's license, because I didn't have mine. But anyway, this officer, David, he said, I'll show you how to get up to the road. And I'm going, okay, he's going to shake us down, and he's got a gun. And I'm going, okay, what is it with me and Honduras men and guns? I'm going, this isn't cool. And so we go up, and I'm praying. But see, in the morning, here's where God was, and he was here all the time. That morning, me and Drew, we'd got up, and we had said, you know what? We're going to be out here today on our own. We're going over to these meetings, and we got to go rent a car, and there's not going to be anybody with us. And we just prayed for safety, and we prayed that God would be with us in that vehicle and all that. And little did we know that God was going to give us an armed escort. That was cool. Because he not only then did he come up and show us the way to the road where he was going to shake us down and take money from us. We asked him, I said, why don't you just come with us? He said, where are you going? I told him, we're going to the dump. He'd never been to the dump. Never been to Afe. Never been to Villa Linda Miller. He said, what time can you be back? I said, what time do you got to be back? He said, I got to be back by 2. I said, okay, we'll have you back by 2 o'clock. So here goes God taking a guy on a street corner that makes $0, looking at some gringos thinking, I can get $100 out of this. I can live for 2 months on that. And taking that, and then God takes that guy and puts him into a van where people are praying for him. People are praying for themselves, not to get shot, not to get robbed, or anything like that. And all of a sudden, we're driving down the road, and he joins us at Afe, and he sees these little kids. And he asks us to pray for him and his family, and we go from there, and he joins us for lunch out of Villa Linda Miller, which was huge. From there, we come back, and we drive him back, and we get off, and he takes us back into downtown Tegus, and we let him off. Gets out, and he said, are you going to pray for me? We get out right there. Me and Brian and a couple other people, we lay hands on David and we prayed for him. That's the power of God. God was with this team the whole way because they were living their lives vertically. They were looking at God first each and every morning. And then they were waking up and praying that they would not be the same when they went to bed that night as they woke up in the morning, but they would reflect the image of Christ. That's what this team did. That's what's so huge. That's what's so cool about this church, because that's the feeling that comes about it. So I'm done. Amen. Amen.
I just really wish we had a little more passion on our team. I mean, and what Brian was saying, it really speaks to our verse, Matthew 5:14-16. This was our theme verse for the trip. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do you light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And that's an admonition to us to let our light shine. It's encouragement to you as well to let your light shine. I just real quickly, Darren Swanson. I don't know if he's probably not here because yesterday he was. Is he here? Maybe not. He was running an ultra marathon, 50 miles yesterday, and he did it in the name of the Micah Project, taking sponsors to help support this ministry. And it's creativity like that. As a result, he got to share his faith. Ministry about the Micah with a lot of unbelievers because he thought, hey, I'm gifted at running. I can let my light shine and do this. So I think those type of creative ways we can think of that, how can I let my light shine? How can I make an impact for Christ? Last Sunday, Brian got to share about some baptisms that happened at the end of this trip. This is just like icing on the cake here because there's so much that God did over the course of the time. Amy on our team, she accepted Christ a year and a half ago and had not been baptized yet. And the Lord was just prompting her while we were there to be baptized, to follow Christ in baptism. You heard the story last week about Marcio, Juan Carlos's friend, who accepted Christ through what God did in the team members and through the Micah. There's a picture of Juan Carlos, the man who was stealing from the Micah Project, and God led him to the Lord. And so this morning we're going to get to end our explanation of Honduras and baptisms by actually having some baptisms here at our church. So Pastor Steve, you can come on up.